To better your best and your world, you need to dig deep and grow. Join us as top experts, leaders, and creators uncover powerful insights to help you grow in life and in work. And now, your host, Michael McAvoy. Welcome, everybody, to this episode of Dig Deep Grow, the show dedicated to helping you better your best and your world. Now, in order to be at your best, one of the things that you've got to focus on is your health, mind, body, nutrition, the whole idea there, in order to be able to operate at your peak potential. And we're going to be addressing that topic today with Dr. Gary Epler. He's a Harvard professor and has a practice in Massachusetts. He's written a book called Fuel for Life, which talks about several different areas that you can address in order to have unlimited creativity and energy. These are important things, especially in a time when everything is moving so rapidly and changing so rapidly. We have a lot of stress in our lives. So whatever we can do in order to help ourselves in the area of health is going to be a great thing. So, Dr. Epler, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Michael, it's just great to be here.
Fantastic. So the book is called Fuel for Life, Five Steps to Success. So the first question is, I guess we can probably, you can go down what the five steps are. But first I'll ask you what your impetus was for the book and, you know, what your ultimate aim for the people reading the book is.
Well, the main aim or the main purpose is really to develop level 10 energy. And that's what I use to describe the energy required to have really a great day, start with a great day, and a great life, a really exciting life, is to have that level 10 energy. And the purpose of the book is to show how to get that level 10 energy and how to get it every single day.
That sounds like a great aim. So let's get right into it with the book itself. Tell me what the five steps to success are.
Sure, we'll start with the three big ones. We've heard about them over and over all of our lives. And there's some new science that's come along, and there's some new exciting ways to do these three events. The three are 8 hours of sleep, 1 hour of vigorous exercise, and to eat the right food. So there's that nutrition. So let's start with that sleep. You need 8 hours, Michael. It turns out that's the science. All the years, hundreds of years of research, we still need 8 hours of sleep. And the best way to get that 8 hours is you go to bed at whatever, 9:30, 10:30, 11, whatever it is, add 8 and get up. Not any sooner and not any later. And the reasoning behind it is it's called adenosine. And it's an energy chemical in the brain. And that energy chemical kind of winds down during the day. It goes out of the brain cells and into the extracellular area, and it's got to get back in to get you that day, and that's the whole purpose of this sleep nowadays, and you need 8 hours to do it. Five just is not enough. It's not enough to get that charged up, that adenosine back where it belongs. 10, it overshoots it and it doesn't do any good.
Well, so okay, I'm gonna tell you that I'm probably among hundreds of thousands of other people that just do not get 8 hours. I'll be glad to tell you that my pattern is more kind of I get 5 hours, I wake up, and then I'll go back to sleep after sometimes a half an hour or an hour. So I can get a good night's sleep, but it's not straight through. So, you know, what are your tips for people who are either insomniacs, have trouble going to sleep, or wake up in the middle of the night?
Oh, two things. Number one, the sleep pattern now, the natural sleep pattern, we have three cycles every night. And they're 2.5 hours each, and you go really deep a couple of minutes, and then most of the other time is sort of light sleep, and then you really go to a very light sleep, and you could wake up during that cycle. There's no question about it. But then you just dive right in back into the next cycle. So that's why people kind of wake up, is because we have three natural cycles. And here's the trick you can also try. So it's just a natural event, and so you write it out and you go back to sleep. As long as you stay in bed sort of supine during that time. That was 8 hours. That's all that's needed. But the other trick is, I just found out recently, naps. Naps are they're fantastic. They used to be called a power nap. Well, it turns out that if you take a nap for 18 minutes, 20 minutes or less, it'll absolutely give you a ton of energy. If you take a nap for 30 minutes, it'll drain all the energy, and it will start you in that cycle, that third cycle, the fourth cycle, and it really, you can't sleep at night. So naps are great, and take a little one. If you're tired, 18 minutes, and sit your iPhone or whatever it is, and get up, and it's just great.
So if I wake up at night, you said that the trick was to do something, or well, I didn't quite catch it.
If you wake up at night, there's three or four ways. You can count backwards from 100 down. You can self-hypnotize yourself. You start with your toes, and you just relax your toes, relax your legs, relax your chest, and you can self-hypnotize yourself. Those are a couple of ways. But that's the idea, is just relax and stop thinking about whatever it is that's going through your mind, and that'll usually work.
Okay. So the naps are a great thing. I've actually done those. I have felt, though, that sometimes when I have a good nap, that makes my night's sleep a little more challenging.
So. Only if you sleep more than 20 minutes.
Only if you sleep more than 20 minutes. Okay, so that's the key.
If you sleep at 30 minutes, 35 minutes or 45 minutes, you won't sleep for anything that night.
Okay, so it's all a matter of the time.
You have to do it less than 20 minutes. It really is perfect. That's why I say you set a clock or an alarm clock or something, and it really works. But if you, 30 minutes, all it takes is 30 minutes, you snoozed out for 30 minutes, you're not going to sleep at all that night.
Wow, okay. That's
because it sets up those three cycles. It sets up one of those natural cycles that you have.
Okay. All right. So we're talking with Dr. Gary Epler. The book is Fuel for Life. And by the way, we have some copies that we can give away here. So if you'd like to send your name and address for the first three, we will send a copy out to you. Gary has said he would help out with that. So the email address you want to send that to is liveshow@digdeepgrow.com. All right, so there you go. So we have, Doctor, we have step number one, which is sleep. Let's go to the next step.
All right, it's exercise. And there's 101 good reasons to exercise, but we'll just talk about a couple of them. And the first one is that people think, well, okay, I can't exercise. I don't have the energy. I'm too tired. It makes me tired. It's the opposite. Exercise gives you a huge amount of energy. And that's really what I mean by level 10 energy. And in order to do that, though, you need to do 1 hour's worth every day. And you need to do vigorous exercise, just enough to your ability. You don't want to go overboard. But just a real good vigorous exercise. And it'll be amazing how much energy it'll give you. It'll give you energy for the rest of the day. And that's the number one reason I like to exercise. But there are so many others that you've heard about it. Certainly conditioning, increased muscle strength in the heart. It makes the heart more efficient, makes the lungs more efficient. And there's a new one. Do you exercise, Michael?
I do. I exercise every day for a half hour. So I'm hoping.
That's good.
I'm hoping that.
What type do you do?
Well, during the summer, I like to swim every day, and then during the off season, so to speak, I do weight training and get on an elliptical.
Oh, that's fantastic! It's exactly what I was going to say. You need to change it up. It's really important to do the aerobic kind, but it's also, we need to do a little bit of weights. Everybody needs to do weights, especially after 45 and 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's really important to do weights.
Make a point of that.
Muscle mass.
Yeah, the muscle mass question is a pretty big one, so talk a little about that.
Well, that's exactly what happens. I think it starts at probably 29, it probably starts, but it certainly sets in about 40 or 50, and we lose muscle mass just by the aging process. And exercise will absolutely stop that. It will just keep that muscle mass going. And if you lose muscle mass for 20 or 30 years, you're just not going to be able to literally get up. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens to a lot of people in their 80s and 90s. They're sitting on a couch. They can't get up mm-hmm. because their hamstrings, their quads are just too weak. It's really helpful just to do a little bit of weights. It doesn't have to be a huge amount.
Get this podcast delivered to you automatically. You can subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and more. You'll find the links here or on our website, digdeepgrow.com. What is the link, though, as we age and the lack of muscle mass or exercise, if you want to put it that way, between that the lack of that and disease or the greater likelihood of having a disease?
Oh, there's no question about heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, all those big three. Exercise will control those, and sometimes it can actually reverse them. But those are the big ones, just the heart disease, high blood pressure, and diabetes. And of course, strokes. Those are the big ones. And it helps manage those issues if a person has them. It just helps to control those problems much better.
Okay, is it going to make a difference? I'm sorry, go ahead, Gary.
There's one little thing that new that just came up recently about exercise. I do exactly what you're doing. I do my mile or so of running, and then I do some weights every once in a while. But I also once a week go to a spin class. And spin is with the bikes, but it's a class. And my wife has been going to classes for years and years. And I said, I can't go to those classes. I don't want somebody telling me what to do. But they're fantastic. Is what happens is when you get a whole group of people exercising and working up a sweat, there's a hormone, oxytocin, produced. And it's the so-called bonding hormone. And you really have this kind of bonding that goes on when you exercise together, and it gives you energy. It just it's a good feeling.
One of the chapters in your book is about social interaction, and I guess that's
right.
That's among what you just mentioned there.
That's exactly it, and exercise is a great way to do it.
Okay, well, we're going to, I'll ask you, you mentioned an hour a day. I think that for most people, that may be challenging, but is there going to be a huge difference if you can get a half hour in versus an hour?
Well, here's a story. 20 minutes is really all you need to prolong your life mm-hmm. for health reasons. There's no question. 20 minutes is fine. It'll give you, I think, 5 to 7 years.
Okay.
And 30 minutes is perfect if you want that level 10 energy. See, that's the issue. If you really want that kick, that extra kick, you have to do that hour, so that's what that's about.
All right.
Because it also you get the endorphins going, you get dopamine, you get serotonin, all of these natural chemicals. The brain is like a pharmaceutical company. It literally can produce every single thing that we use for medications, and exercise sort of brings all those out.
Okay, so that's a great, you covered that very well. Let's go on to the next one now. In order to exercise, we probably have to have the right foods to charge us up.
That's exactly it.
Let's talk about those foods that will charge us up.
This is the hardest one. The sleep, you can do it, and exercise, you can do it. I tell you, food, it is the hardest thing. The nutrition, to do it right. And here's how I approach it. There are three groups of foods to eat. And stick with those three groups and sort of try to eliminate everything else, and it'll work. And that first group is lean protein. And protein is perfect for energy. It's the best energy one there is. And lean protein, for chicken without any skin, just boil it and just get rid of all the fat and all the skin, salmon, And legumes, beans, and so forth, have a great protein. And the other vegetable is quinoa. Are you familiar with quinoa?
Oh, yeah. I that's a regular part of my diet.
That's fantastic. Just great protein, and it's got a lot of potassium. It even has magnesium, which is really great for the heart vessel. But that's the first one, lean protein. And then the second one is we need fats. We need it for hormones. We need fats for structural cells. And the best one is omega-3 fatty acids. And that's a group unsaturated fatty acids. And we've heard about saturated fatty acids and unsaturated for years. You want to stick with the unsaturated ones.
Mm-hmm.
And omega-3 is an unsaturated one, and that seems to be the best of the bunch because it protects your heart, number one, and number two, it actually will neutralize the bad ones, and so that's sort of a really nice one to get.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is it's a little bit difficult to find omega-3s. They're in salmon is number one. Spinach has a little bit, and some of the green vegetables, and walnuts, so those are the omega-3s.
Okay.
But those are key, omega-3, those are the fatty acids. So now the big one, the hardest one, carbohydrates. The number one food in America, Michael, you know what it is? It's potatoes, right?
Potatoes, French fries.
potatoes. Yeah. I mean, of all the foods, the number one food that's sold in America is potatoes. And that's what I call a fast burn carb. In other words, when you have a potato, a white potato, it increases the blood sugar. And when you increase the blood sugar, insulin's increased. And when insulin's increased, cortisol is increased. And cortisol is, number one, it's inflammatory, so it causes inflammation. And number two, it causes cortisol bellies because it stores fat. And it all starts with these fast-burn carbohydrates. So the big group that you need to have are what we call slow-burn carbohydrates. And those do not increase the blood sugar. And those are our old-fashioned green vegetables. Broccoli is up there on the list. Spinach is probably number one. And there's some new ones that are coming along are just great. And the other ones, so all the vegetables. And fruits are actually okay. I always had a question about fruit because it's sweet. How can that be healthy? How can that, why doesn't that increase your blood sugar? And it turns out that it is metabolized in the liver. It's fructose. And fructose is metabolized in the liver, which is pretty good because it doesn't increase insulin.
Well, let me stop you there. I wanted to ask you, I've heard many people say, and nutritionists and other doctors will say, the body doesn't know the difference between fructose and white sugar because it's all sugar. Now, is that true, or what's your take on that?
Not my opinion. Mm-hmm. My opinion, no, it's not true at all.
Okay.
Sucrose is made up of fructose and glucose. That's true. It's a disaccharide. Right? And sucrose increases insulin. Fructose is metabolized in the liver, and so it doesn't kick in that insulin response. It's my opinion.
Okay. All right. So there
is a difference.
There's a pretty big controversy. There always is with diet.
Well, that's why this one's so hard.
Yeah, but
it changes every day.
It's true, but I'll ask you since you read the studies. You're a doctor, so you know these things. The paleo diet, the idea, the Atkins type of diet where you're focusing on animal protein a lot. In your view, is there science to back up that, that dietary regimen?
Well, first, the Atkins diet was a catastrophe, not because of the protein. Protein is great. It's what I call the friends that protein hangs out with. And when you have the animal fats, like a hamburger, a steak, there's so much saturated fat in there. And as a matter of fact, the more saturated fat, the better it tastes. Bacon. Yeah, that's protein, but it's got so much fat associated with it. That's the danger of the Atkins diet. The paleo diet is a little better, and actually it's not too bad if you for example, free-range beef. That's beef that walks around the cow. The beef walks around. It's the cattle that are fed in the free range. And no antibiotics, no supplemental agents of any kind. It's just grass, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And the meat from that will have actually unsaturated fat. It'll have the omega-6s in there. And it's not nearly as bad as the ones that are stuffed because you get a ton of saturated fats. So there is some good thing about that, the paleo diet from that standpoint.
Okay. So let's talk about the you mentioned cortisol, and now I guess you've mentioned the good side of the diet. Let's talk about what the stress that cortisol brings and what the link is with carbohydrates, fast-burn carbohydrates.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's the issue. And fast-burn carbohydrates are all our familiar foods. They're cheap, they taste fantastic, and we've been conditioned to have these since birth. And they're basically just sugar-based foods, sugar-based drinks. When you go into a quick store or something to pick up something, you just look in those refrigerators, and there's just hundreds and hundreds of sugar-based drinks. It's so easy. It's so cheap. It's everywhere, and the sugar-based foods. And here's what happens when you have the sugar-based foods: is the glucose goes up in the bloodstream. When glucose goes up in the bloodstream, insulin comes out to take care of it, which is okay, it's fine. But if it goes too high, it overshoots. You have too much insulin. And a couple things happen. Number one, pretty soon you get resistant to insulin and you have type 2 diabetes. That's number one, but that's a different issue. But the main thing that happens is cortisol then comes out in a response to this hyperinsulin response. And cortisol does two things. It really, the big thing it does is cause inflammation, and it causes inflammation of those arteries leading to our heart, and it just causes generalized inflammation. So that's how you get heart disease and then hypertension and strokes because of that of the inflammation of the arteries. But the other thing it causes is glycogen, it's triglycerides. Because it has too much, there's just too much blood sugar, so it uses up what you need for energy just to walk around. But there's so much left over that it stores it, and it stores it in the form of triglycerides. And triglycerides float around the bloodstream. Low levels don't hurt at all, but when they get high levels, they really cause direct injury to those arteries.
Mm.
And the other thing is, they deposit themselves in the abdominal fat cells and hip fat cells, but basically abdominal fat cells. And so when you see an individual with a big belly, you can almost predict exactly what kind of diet they have, because it is the fast-burn carbohydrates. It's not fat that's doing that. It's not the proteins. It's fast-burn carbohydrates, sugar, and it turns it into triglycerides.
What do you think is the, now since 1980, around, or 85, I guess, you know, we've had this huge epidemic with obesity. What is your belief about the root cause of it? Is it the refined sugars and carbohydrates?
Oh, absolutely is. That's the cause. I mean, that's the direct cause. The indirect cause is just society and conditioning. Conditioning from birth, we've been conditioned to eat a lot and eat things that are tasty. And the other thing is portion size has just quadrupled for the past 10 or 15 years. Everything you're buying in stores, bigger restaurants. There's enough for three people when you go to restaurants, and it's there, you eat it. It's again a conditioning response, and it's just all of those things coming together.
Is there any Whole Foods that you would still consider to be a fast-burn carbohydrate? For instance, like a brown rice, would that be a fast-burn carbohydrate?
Yeah, there are not too many Whole Foods that are. Your Whole Foods are usually pretty good. The raw Whole Foods, you usually can't go wrong. But the refined white ones, like white rice, and white wheat, all the refined grains and so forth, they take away the fiber. And fiber is it's neutral. And you need about 25 grams of it today, a day, and it sort of absorbs toxic substances. That's why it's such a good thing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of binds to some bad foods, and you just eliminate them. And so that's why the brown rices and those kind of whole grains are good, because they kind of neutralize the bad ones.
Okay, I'm talking with Dr. Gary Epler about his book, Fuel for Life. And Gary, we have enough time for about another question here. So let's address the mind and how it can be used to create energy, level 10 energy.
Well, that's the best. The fourth step, before we get to the fifth, it's just a quick one, is to learn something new every day. And that involves the mind. Just learn something. It'll give you energy. And the more random it is, learn about economics. Learn Shakespeare. Learn how to swim. Learn how to do a triathlon. Anything. Anything. It's amazing. It'll give you a huge amount of energy. Now, the mind. This is really, really just an amazing component of medicine, of taking care of patients. I've always... When I see patients, I give them the sort of instructions. Well, take this medicine, take it a certain time, and this and that, and eat the right foods and everything. But I always end by saying, well, there's also use the mind. And the main thing is have a positive approach to disease. And then there's breathing techniques and so forth. As far as energy goes, the best is to go into what I call alpha and theta brainwave state a few minutes every day. And the alpha, we have five brainwaves. Gamma is real, real fast, and delta is very, very slow. Delta is that you need at night for a few minutes. Very slow. But the one we're talking right now, awake, is called beta. Alpha is a little slower than beta. And if you've been daydreaming, that's the best. You're an alpha. Alpha rhythm when somebody daydreams. And it's really healthy to do that. It not only gives you energy, but it has a positive response for the heart, and it even improves the length of the telomeres. Those are those little ends of the chromosomes, and each time the cell divides, those cells will live longer. And so there's just so many benefits from alpha brainwave. And so daydreaming is one way to do it. And, of course, the old way is meditation. But I can't sit with my eyes closed. I'm too hyper. So I go into alpha rhythm on the treadmill. And the way I do it, I start out sort of you space out. You just kind of look at those TV monitors without the TV on, and you kind of stare between your eyes or something. And you just kind of space out, and after a while, you'll find yourself an alpha. And when you're there, you can do two, three things. You can kind of, you can just not think of anything. You can sort of plan the day's agenda. You can help. You can heal. Give some attention to parts that are hurting, because there's always some part that's hurting. And so those are the two or three things you can do while you're in that alpha state.
That's wonderful. Well, Dr. Epler, I really appreciate your taking the time to go through some of all of the steps, as far as I can tell, the five steps that you mentioned in your book. And the book is Fuel for Life, Five Steps to Success. You have five steps to success. Everything that I've read in it is spot on as far as everything I've learned. And so it's just kind of corroborates what I feel. And, coming from you, that's good to hear.
It's great.
So anyway, thanks so much. And hopefully we'll be able to connect again when you have another book coming out.
Oh, absolutely. And I'd like to leave you with a couple of things. Number one, I have three or four more steps, but one of them is to be grateful at all times. And the other one, see the good in all things. It's amazing. It'll give you a huge amount of energy.
That's great. Thanks so much, Gary.
All right, Michael.
Have a good one.